Okay, welcome everyone to this meeting of City of Sydney Local Planning Panel. And before starting, I would like to acknowledge that we are meeting on the land of the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation, pay my respects to elders past and present. And the panel also acknowledges the present Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people who reside in this area. So the meeting today is to consider the development applications on the agenda. The members of the panel are myself, Richard Pearson, as independent chair, and then we've got Helen Lockhead and Peter Romey on my right as independent expert members, and community representative Amelia Thorpe on my left as the panel tonight. So welcome everyone to the meeting. Please be assured the panel will be making decisions tonight based on the planning merits of each application and following consideration of any views expressed in submissions and by people addressing the panel tonight. Determinations and any relevant decision of the panel will be by a majority of votes of members present and entitled to vote. If both the tie, the chair will have a casting vote. As an important transparency measure, the reasons for our decisions will be recorded in the minutes as part of the decision. And where we go against or amend the officer's recommendation, if that happens, the panel will state our reasons for doing that. Just in relation to item 9 on the agenda, which is for 19 A2F William Street, Alexandria, there is what's called a relevant to memo, which deals with the draft voluntary planning agreement, which was publicly notified and exhibited, which closed on the 2nd of October. After the finalisation of the assessment report, that memo is available on the website and in the foyer, and essentially says that there were no submissions received on the draft planning agreement. It will be discussed further by the panel at that item. So the format for tonight is that the Manager of Planning Assessments will provide a brief overview of each application as they are considered, the key issues raised, and the recommendation of Council staff. After that, the panel will hear from members of the public who have registered to speak, followed by the applicant and or the applicant's representative who may like to address the issues raised by members of the public. Please note there is a 3-minute time limit for each speaker with a warning bell at 2 minutes. And I do ask that each speaker be heard in silence while they're addressing the panel and that courtesy and respect be observed throughout the meeting. And in particular, I would request no personal criticism be directed at any speaker or council staff, which would be contrary to the panel's code of conduct and not accepted by the panel. The panel may ask questions of speakers to clarify our understanding of what is being said. And if you have registered to speak, your address to the panel will be recorded. All the public meetings of the panel are recorded and the recordings are made available on the City's website. Please note no recording or filming otherwise. After hearing from speakers, the panel will consider and make its decision on each application, which may involve adjourning the meeting to confer among ourselves before reconvening, or we might make the decision without the need to adjourn. And if the panel does consider more information is required before making a decision, it may be that the panel defers its decision for consideration at a later date. So with those preliminary comments, I move to disclosures of interest as item 1 on the agenda. And the panel notes the tabling of 2 updated pecuniary interest returns for myself, Richard Pearson, and Amelia Thorpe. And then also, in accordance with Clause 4.9 of the Code of Conduct for Local Planning Panels, all members tonight have signed a declaration form in relation to each matter on the agenda. Panel members have declared they have no conflict with any item on the agenda. In my own case, I do in relation to item 4, which is the development application for 65 Cowper Wharf Roadway, Willamaloo, declare I have a non-significant, non-pecuniary interest as I serve on the Central Sydney Planning Committee with Michael Harrison from Architectus, who is a consultant for the applicant. The relationship was a professional and relatively brief one, but I make that declaration for openness and transparency. Item 2, confirmation of the minutes of the meeting. The panel notes the minutes of the local planning panel meeting of the 12th of September, which were endorsed by me as chair. And we also note the minutes of the decision review panel of the 18th of September, which were endorsed by Stephen Lehman as the chair of that meeting. So now move to item 3, which is the development application for 55A Leichhardt Street, Glebe. Now I do have a number of speakers. I have two local residents submitters, and I have a number of people for the applicant. In relation to the applicant, I think there are five people. I'm probably going to ask, and the panel will ask, that you limit that if possible to two, and certainly no more than three speakers. But I'm going to firstly call on Janet Simpson. I'm very sorry. I routinely seem to forget this. I'm going to hand over to Bill Mackay. It's probably because he sits behind me. Hand over to Bill Mackay, who will run through the application briefly. Thank you.
So it's an application relating to Bellevue House at 55A Bontart Street in Glebe. The application seeks consent for the use of the premises as a restaurant on the upper level for 152 patrons and a cafe 96 patrons on the lower level. The hours of operation proposed are 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. 7 days. The site is located with, or the premises is located within a RE1 public recreation zone. The proposed development is permissible with consent. The application is recommended for refusal. So the application was notified in December last year to January of this year. 58 owners and occupiers were notified. 83 submissions were received. 22 of those submissions were in support of the proposal and 61 were objecting to the proposal. The submissions relate to the potential impacts of the increase in capacity from 60, which is the current approved capacity of the premises, to 248 patrons. The hours of operation of the premises being adjacent to a residential area, traffic and parking impacts, noise impacts from the use. The use of the premises for functions, one of the elements of the proposal is that the premises can be used for functions up to 15 times a year. The fact that the premises would be a licensed premises, potential antisocial behaviour from patrons of the premises. The use is inconsistent with the zoning of the premises for open space and that the premises should be used as a community use. Also issues in relation to waste management, landscaping in the park, that there's insufficient storage for tables and chairs in relation to the premises they use, conflict of interest, the council is the owner of the land, and the notification period. So this is the property identified in red, that's a lot, and the use relates to Bellevue House within that area. And the blue identifies the premises from which the submissions came. So those are residential premises within proximity of the site and certainly adjacent to the vehicle access routes to the site. So this is a view of the existing premises, the location. It is located within an RE1 public recreation zone, and then the land adjacent to that is R1 general residential zone. This plan shows the vehicle access routes to the site, which are essentially in part one-way access routes to the site. This is a view of the site. You can see the Bellevue House behind the trees looking north from the end of Leichhardt Street. And this is a view looking southeast at the upper ground floor level. That's where the restaurant premises would be. And this is looking northeast near the ground floor. And this is at the lower level of Bellevue House. You can see on the right-hand side of the image, that's where the cafe and the associated outdoor seating with the cafe will be, and the steps, which lead down from Leichhardt Street for sure. And that's a closer look of that lower level where the cafe would be. This is the end of Leichhardt Street, which would provide vehicle access to the premises. At the end of that street you have an accessible parking space and a loading zone which is located on the right hand side of that image. And this is looking in the opposite direction where the black car is where you have the accessible space and the loading zone. This is neighbouring apartments at 16 Leichhardt Street immediately adjacent to that loading zone space. and this is a neighbouring residence on the opposite side of Lighthouse Street, number 53, so that's the nearest residential premises to Bellevue House. This is looking west along Lighthouse Street, and looking from the corner of Lighthouse Street and Oxley Street towards the site. This plan shows the proposed restaurant level of the building. It's at ground level, but it is the upper level of the building. So there's internal seating and external seating within the veranda of the building, and then outside the veranda within the open space. And this is the plan of the lower level, where you have the cafe and then outdoor seating adjacent to those steps, which run down from the end of Lighthouse Street within the park towards the foreshore. So just in terms of the application history for the site, there is an approval for a cafe on the site, and that has a condition restricting the patron capacity to a maximum of 60, and the approved hours of operation are 6:30 a.m. to 6 p.m. and until 8 p.m. during daylight savings. In terms of compliance with the LEP and DCP controls, the proposal that the intensity of the use is considered being consistent with the aim to ensure that the pattern of land use and density reflects the existing and future capacity of the transport network. It's obviously a state heritage item, so there are heritage provisions relevant to the development. The compliance with the heritage provisions is not considered to be an issue, and the state heritage exemption has been provided. Only minor works are proposed to the building. And in terms of trading and management of the premises, it's considered that the premises is likely to result in adverse impacts to residential surrounding area due to the potential traffic impacts, and that's related to the proposed capacity or increase in capacity. So the issues are essentially patron capacity, parking, and traffic movements. In terms of patron capacity, a total of 248 patrons is proposed. Counter approval is for 60. 152 of those will be related to the restaurant use and 96 to the cafe. The applicant has advised that the premises will operate for the most part, probably about 60% of that capacity, or 150, and only at full capacity for functions. The applicant has been requested to consider reducing the capacity, but that has not occurred. So the assessment is based on the total capacity proposed of 248 patrons. In terms of traffic movements, vehicle access to the site is essentially via a one-way street network. There's one vehicle width at the end of Lighthouse Street. There's no turning circle at the end of the Lighthouse Street cul-de-sac at this point, when the accessible parking space and the loading zone is in use. The loading zone is time limited till 6 p.m. After that, it becomes unrestricted parking. So there is no suitable location for drop-off and pick-up, or at least a turning of vehicles that are dropping off or picking up people from the premises. So the applicant has requested a change to the restrictions to allow vehicles, but that's not something that can be approved. Part of this development needs to be subject to a separate application to the local pedestrian, cycling and traffic calming committee. So this plan shows the access arrangements to the site. So along Lighthouse Street Oxford Street is one way, and part of Lighthouse Street is one way, part of it is two way, and that little rectangular space identified is that area where you have the accessible parking space and the loading zone, which would need to be altered to provide for adequate turning of vehicles. And that's a photograph of that space. In terms of car parking, a car parking survey has been carried out and the information submitted in support of the application. The parking survey is of an area within 300 metres walk of the premises. Within that area, potentially 107 on-street parking spaces were surveyed during the period of the survey. The traffic survey also surveyed the Belt House restaurant. It's not too far away in terms of how people arrived at the restaurant, whether or not they drove, whether or not they came in taxi or any other mode of transport. 20% of the patrons to the Belt House were identified as accessing or driving to the premises and parking there or on the street. 20% of those 248 patrons for this application would result in a need at some point, potentially up to 50 parking spaces. Obviously, over the period of the opening hours, that may be more than 50 spaces being required. So there's insufficient parking available within the surveyed area. This plan shows the streets that were surveyed, and this table identifies the potential capacity at certain times of the day in relation to the parking spaces that were available. So, for example, on Friday, Saturday evening, that lower part of the table, you can see, say, at 8:30 in the evening, there was on average 11.25 spaces available. Clearly, if 20% of people around about that time are trying to access the premises to their vehicle and park on the street, there's not going to be sufficient parking available. So the applicant has identified additional parking at the end of Glebe Point Road. That's a good 500 metre walk away through the Foreshore Park. They propose a shuttle service with a pedal-powered rickshaw as a potential alternative. It's not supported as a something that could address the potential shortfall of car parking on a regular basis. It might be something that may aid with functions at the premises, but on a daily basis it's not considered to be something that would be feasible. So this plan shows that potential alternate parking and the access route to the premises on the foreshore. So the application is recommended for refusal. Thank you.
Bill, so as I mentioned, we do have a number of speakers, and just in case the applicant's representatives weren't here at the start of the meeting, I would ask that you limit that to two or three speakers on behalf of the applicant. But firstly, I've got Janet Simpson, if she's here. Yeah, Janet, if you wanted to come forward to the chair in front of you, yeah, that one, and press the microphone button. And if you'd like to address.
Thank you. I've submitted at least one detailed objection, and I also submitted a car parking space survey that a friend and I did. I've lived in the area for 40 years. I've lived in Stewart Street. It is one of the red marked lines. It is narrow and has no legal parking at all. In Stewart Street, which is only about a bit over 100 metres long, I think, there are four blocks of units, and that is all. Three of those blocks are my strata plan and the other one. They were all registered as strata plans in the 1970s. There are 30-odd units in the first one, and there are 43 in mine. There are three blocks, but one strata plan. So there are over 70 units there. Everyone in those units has access to either a garage or a car space, but many people now, in order to pay the rent in that area, they need to have two people to share the rent, or there are couples who live there who have two cars. So all those excess cars have to find parking in the local streets because there's only one allowed. Apart from that, your own photos show how dense the parking is in daytime, and that's when most people are at work, or a lot of people are at work. There is very little parking space available even for residents. I have a school friend who lives in Leichhardt Street in a terrace who does not have a garage. she sometimes has to park 100 metres away from her house. There is heavy traffic as it is. The garbage trucks have done a lot of damage in the past because there's such close parking. And that's my primary objection. The other objection, of course, is the hours. If you have people there till 10 o'clock, they're going to be making their way out up my street, because my street is the only vehicular access from this cottage to back to Glen Point Road, so they all have to come up our street. But as it is, we have parking problems from visitors. We've had people park in some of the car spaces and leave their cars there all day and go and get the bus using it as a commuter access thing. We've had people park on other people's residents' driveways. The police won't come to deal with that because it's private property, but they will, if I give them the registration number, they will contact the owner and tell them to move it. But that's the situation now. With something like this, it would be unimaginable, but your report already has assessed that. Thank you. Thank you.
That was okay. All yours, Paul.
I live at 53 Lancashire Lane, so I'm effectively the neighbour of the applicant. I agree with what Jeanette has said. Parking is a very big issue there. It's a one-way street leading into two ways, and there are even the garbage trucks have trouble turning. And sometimes I've had the delivery trucks come to deliver furniture to my place. They actually effectively cannot turn. They are reversing into the place because the parking is the issue. And again, even in the daytime, there is parking is an issue. And I don't know how the applicant thinks that Friday and Saturday. We have trouble on Friday and Saturday, so the visitors who are coming over to visit the people in the units in front of me, and they are sometimes parking in my driveway. I'm lucky that I have a driveway, and then I have to call the police because they're parking my driveway. They are also parking over the footpath into the park. So, and I don't know how 240-odd patrons could be accommodated into a place like that, and the noise which will affect us, I agree with the refusal, so I don't know, you know, how even, you know, it's, one could fathom that, it's effectively a small place becomes a function centre. 240 people going in and out. It'll be a blockage. So I think I agree with the refusal of the council. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul. That's good. Thanks, Paul. So now, on behalf of the applicant, as I mentioned, there were five people registered to speak. Preference would be if two or three people were able to come forward on behalf of the applicant. Who would like to speak first on behalf of the applicant? Sure. If you can come forward and just give us your name and you have 3 minutes. Thanks, and just press the button when you're ready to go.
So hello, my name's Peter Hannell, so I'm the first person in the list of the applicants. So I'm representing a group. We're a number of partners, including Adam Brother and Anton Moskovich, who's a famous chef in Sydney. We started this project about 2 years ago. We put a proposal in for Bellevue Cottage on the current day. To say the least, it's been a bit of a struggle dealing with, you know, all the different components of council, which we're still discovering the moment, because now we're doing with planning, and previously we're dealing with property, and it's been a struggle. So we understand that parking is an issue. We haven't sort of shied away from that fact. We're not trying to, you know, squeeze something into the impossible. But we're a very determined and creative bunch of entrepreneurs, and our vision is to create a really special place at Bellevue House, and that's a chef's hat restaurant with a cafe to serve the citizens of Glebe. We're not going to fit 240 cars on Leichhardt Street, but what we can do is come up with some creative solutions to be able to solve that problem in a very commercial way. For example, 650 metres away from the site along the foreshore, there's plenty of parking at night. It's on a park. And so what we propose is one particular solution, that we get a solar-powered renewable energy tuk-tuk, and we ferry people from the restaurant. We incentivise. If you come by Uber, and a lot of people in the inner city now travel by Uber, if you come by Uber, we will incentivise the Uber ride, so that you come by Uber, you get a complimentary drink or a complimentary item. Business is not about, it looks all black and white, the numbers look black and white, these pages are black and white facts. Business is not about that. Business is about being creative. Business is about being resourceful, and business is about evolving to solve these problems. 2 minutes up. I don't want to go. So I am sorry for the, to be honest, I feel for the neighbours as well, because Sydney's become difficult. The streets have become a parking lot, let alone trying to park under some of the complexes in Sydney. But that's not really, shouldn't be the burden of the restaurant. When it was said that we refused, that the council came to us and said that we didn't refuse. We refused what they wanted us to do. What we wanted to do is come together and come to some sort of solution to enable business to work. However, we couldn't, they weren't happy with that proposal. And so we said, look, we can't accept your restriction on us. Now, the previous people didn't work. Bellevue Cottage had a history of failure there. The one previous lease that was there and didn't work because of the, that's 3 minutes, I suppose. Yeah. So, didn't work because of the constraints, because the black and white constraints that were put on council on business. And so we want to avoid that. We want to work with council. We want to create the sort of night environment, Sydney, state government and the local council is trying to encourage. And we want to love our neighbours, right? Because our neighbours are our best customers. And not only is that, do we personally believe that, but that also makes good business sense. Now, David and Anton are going to speak, but out of respect for the panel, we'll just cut it down to Matt Brader, who's from Brader Consulting, who is our representative.
Thank you. Thanks. So any questions of Peter? Do the panel? Just hang on, Peter. We've got to...
I did have a question about the practicality of the tuk-tuk. I mean, I can understand if you had an event on and you'd be ferrying people backwards and forwards, but with a dribbling kind of clientele coming and going, how would that really be implementable? Oh, sorry.
Is that right? Yeah. We'd have to have a good communication system, obviously. The tuk-tuk would be renewable. We'd solar power it. We'd make sure that it's coordinated. The same sort of organisation that might need to go around valet parking, for example, where people drive cars to a certain spot. By the way, we have a whole list of things that possible solutions. I can't say this would be a solution or that would be a solution. It might be a combination of a lot of things, but it's just that business needs that sort of flexibility. Business needs to be able to work. And so we would like to work together with council. We'd like to work together with planning. We'd like to come to a solution that's going to be economically viable for us. Now, it's tough. It says that 60 to 248, it's not actually, doesn't paint the whole picture. 60% of those seats are external. They're affected by the weather. So today, we won't be able to survive if we can't, on good sunny days, have a lot of people, and if we can't, on rainy days like this, contract for just the internal space. So we just need that flexibility. That was our argument with council and planning all along. It wasn't that we were being obstinate. We weren't asking for the VCA report, acoustic, all those reports said we can have 300. We didn't ask for 300. Because we, according to that layout of that site, we could make 248 work for us. So, sorry if I...
Can I just have a quick question before you go, Peter? And I know Max Prager is going to address the panel then. Is it all or nothing for you, or are you prepared to consider a lesser capacity of approval?
Hello? Yeah. Absolutely not all or nothing. It's all about compromise. It's all about finding a solution. That's what business is about. You can never say all or nothing business. We're having arguments now with our coffee suppliers because we're coming to a compromise. It's just that what we hit in council, we felt it was an all or nothing proposition, and that's why we said, no, we don't accept this. That was our feeling. But it might be wrong, right, there might be some defence on the other side, but that was our feeling.
The other issue that has been highlighted is the hours of operation, and obviously there's parking on the streets during the day, but at night time that's also under pressure, but it's also the quiet enjoyment of residents in terms of evening patronage. So what about on that apartment? Are you prepared to compromise there as well?
So look, bottom line, we're prepared to compromise everywhere, but just on that issue of noise, we've got one of the best sound acoustic people in Sydney, is highly respected by council, do a report, and he said that you guys are lucky you've got the Anzac Bridge there because it covers noise. There's just a general background noise that covers. So we are, yes, prepared to compromise, but we've got a solid report that says that we are within. And mind you, the cottage itself is, if you have a look at the block of land, it's on a big block of land and sort of isolated deep in, you know, on that block of land. So noise-wise, they did all the tests, they put all the expensive equipment there, and I should know, we paid for it, and they produced a report and said that you guys are good to go. So, look,
No, that's good. Thanks for answering the question. So, we have one more question.
Sorry, the request for the number of patrons inside, so that exceeds the VCA for seated. So are you requesting that you would have some functions where it would be just standing functions, or?
I'm a bit surprised. I was told that today, so I'm not sure if there's a misprint or something, because we didn't exceed any consultant recommendation, anyway, to my knowledge. So I'd like to be able to clarify that, because I just don't want to say anything wrong. I'm a bit surprised. We should be in line with the BCA recommendation, and we should be in line with the sound, and the third one with the traffic. And all of those came in and said, yes, this site can support 300. The contention one was the traffic, and that's all we've been talking about, by the way, with planning for the last 10 months, is just traffic. We didn't hear anything about noise until a few days ago. We didn't hear anything about numbers inside until today. So it's just been traffic, and we've been trying to work out what can we do to solve this. And there are some regulations, like 650 metres isn't that far, but can be far for people. But I think it's the state government that says that 650 metres or 800 metres from a train station is reasonable, and 400 metres of a bus stop is reasonable. We're in the middle there. So we're saying 650 to a restaurant, chef's hat, it's reasonable. People will walk for good food.
Thank you very much, Peter. So call up Max Frager to address the panel for 3 minutes. Thanks very much, Peter.
Sorry. Oh, apologies. I must apologise up front because I'm receiving new hearing devices next week. Not today. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Max Frager's my name, and thank you, panel members, for your time. We became involved in this only about 3 months ago. I'm quite satisfied with everything that was done before we came involved, but they were getting exasperated, and they came to us and we said, yes, we have it, look at it from an independent, you know, consultant point of view. So we did that. Anyway, look, Max Frager, I've been a planner for 50 years, half of that local government, half of that consultant. I live in Lura, and I love doing what we're doing. These clients, I've got to know fairly well. They're passionate to do the right thing here. I respect the fact that this is a difficult situation for a council. I own the land. It's a heritage item. They own the land. They're also the consent authority. There's also a very active community group who, you know, love where they live and all that sort of thing. So it's not an easy balance for the council. I don't think that the reports you have in front of you, however, really strikes the balance of major issues here. So what we're asking is, I'm speaking against the recommendation. I'm asking for time for our passionate people to work through all of the possible scenarios. Internet, you know, discouraging people from driving, almost no parking, but almost no drop-off. I mean, part of the attraction of this is walking or whatever along the harbour. It's part of the experience. There are many, many restaurants and businesses that don't have close parking. And I think that if they're put on parole, they have a certain number, and then above that, they can say, all right, if we perform and if we don't cause major problems, then there are ways forward. But I'm saying to the panel, I respect the panel, I respect the council's, you know, two areas of conflict situation. However, I think this is an opportunity to work with a seriously motivated client to find a compromise. Pages 14 and 15 of your report demonstrate the checkered history of development approvals and failures and leases. I would like to think that these are... I don't put my name behind all clients. These clients, I believe, are the right people to work with council and work with and provide more information back to the panel to find a solution for the long-term maintenance of this building and to find a way that that it can be a nice facility both for the locals and for the whatever. There are many, many ways. You can have water transport, you can have bike transport, you can have walking, you can have escorted, you know, walking tour, that sort of thing. There are so many ways to limit and almost exclude parking and even drop-off. So that's my request. Give them the opportunity to come back with a solution, even if there is a number now and then there's a probationary number above that, and if they perform, it automatically gets renewed. If they don't perform, then it's all them to make sure that they keep the neighbours happy. I believe genuinely that they really do want to work with the neighbours, work with the residents. In the end, you know, local people are going to be quite a lot of bread and butter for this business. And so that's my request. There is a lot of background information. Noise has been proven not to be a problem. Traffic is a difficult situation, but I think distance walking along the harbour is part of the solution. It's not a problem. It's part of the solution. If you're going to come to a place like this with good food, then part of the experience is walking 600 metres or 500 metres or whatever it is. So that's our request. Thank you.
So, question, Matt. So are you asking for the panel to defer this, or is that essentially your request? Yes? Press your button, mate. No, other one.
I don't see any other way because I think that was said by Peter, you know, the recommendation is black and white. I think there has to be an opportunity and a request from the panel to go away and think about lateral solutions to a heritage building with a checkered history in a public place with no parking. And I don't see any other way other than for that to go away, for there to be some discussion and for the panel to get substantially more advice on. And it is difficult. I've been in charge of council property. I've been in charge of council's development assessment. You know, council's got to strike this balance, and I would like to give this. I'd like for me to be part of a long-term solution for this heritage building, and I hope that the panel will see themselves as having an opportunity to find. If you look at that pages 14 and 15 and all those approvals, I'd hope that the panel would feel good if they find a solution to this.
Anyone else on the panel have any questions of Mr. Frager? No? Thanks very much. So, that concludes the speakers on this item. Well, when I ask Mr. Yarn if he can respond to any of the issues that have been raised by the residents and or the applicants, and then it may be on this one, and the panel adjourns just to briefly consider this, so I'll allow Mr. Yarn to respond first.
I sort of appreciate the entrepreneurial flavour that's being brought forward by the proposed operators to try and solve the traffic generation and parking demand that inevitably be created by a successful destination-based restaurant. And that's more or less discounting to some degree the daytime cafe use, which is all outside in any case. We have received the suggested propositions of a rickshaw or a tuk-tuk, as was mentioned, along the foreshore from the end of Glebe Point Road. I really am not persuaded of the practicality of that. Pick up and take away diners on call, and I can't imagine when there is a changeover between seating periods how you could have the capacity for that number of diners without creating an alternative issue of basically a congestion traffic jam of tuk-tuks. There are gradients in the location. It's basically downhill to the site. It's a very attractive site. I'm sure for the proposed functions it would be excellent, but I do not see a solution at the moment coming out of this, despite the willingness to be compromising. That maintains those sort of numbers and has a satisfactory mobility solution for a destination-based restaurant. I think the hours of operation, if they're currently hours at 6 p.m. I think, and slightly later in daylight saving. It's obviously a combination of the extended hours till 10 p.m. by the number, which is the capacity for functions. So obviously they are two variables which do mesh to create a size of impact. So Adjusting hours would have an improvement on the overall impact, but it would be to the detriment of the operation. Adjusting numbers would have an improvement on the impact, but there is this issues about the operation. So they go together.
Unless there's any further questions of Mr. Yarn, I think perhaps the panel will adjourn briefly to consider this matter. I apologise to other speakers who are here for other items, but don't anticipate it being a long adjournment, and we'll reconvene shortly. Thank you. scenes, and I think we now have the recording system back on. Look, the panel had a good discussion. They're not in a position to support the proposal as framed by the applicant, but nor do we want to refuse the application tonight. So what the wording of the resolution of the panel, and I'll ask the panel to vote on it, is that the panel cannot support the proposal in its current form and defers the matter for further discussion between council staff and the applicant to amend the proposal to resolve capacity, traffic, noise management and parking issues for report back to the panel in November. So does the minutes secretary have those words?
Nearly.
So just to amplify on that, we do the panel is keen to see if a solution can be found to this, but we do think the proposal is excessive in terms of its impact on the surrounding streets, principally from traffic and parking, but there are some noise issues there as well. So we do want a serious attempt to resolve this over the next month between the applicant and council staff, and that's why I'm putting a time frame of 1 month, essentially, November, on this to report back to the panel. Hopefully, good endeavours will be made and a solution found in that time. If not, the panel will deal with it either way at that time. So essentially, there's a month to try and sort this out. I'm going to ask the panel, all in favour of that resolution that I've read out, say aye.
Aye.
Approved unanimously. So good luck in sorting that out over the next month. Thank you. Thank you to the speakers and thank you to council staff and the panel. So what we're now going to do is move to the next item on the agenda, which is item 4, development application for 65 Cowper Wharf Roadway, Woolloomooloo. I do have two speakers on behalf of the applicant, but I also have Mark Hardwick. Is Mark yet? Mark Hardwick, a resident. Mark, if you would like, sorry, no, do not come forward. I'm going to ask Bill, who I'm going to have eyes in the back of my head, because I will never forget you again, Bill.
Thank you. This is an application for alterations and additions to an existing mixed-use building to create a new roof terrace with associated landscaping, and that's to be used in association with the adjoining level 5 penthouse. The site is located in the B4 mixed-use zone and the proposal is permissible with consent. The application is recommended for refusal. So the application was notified in April and May of this year. 238 owners and occupiers were notified. 16 submissions were received. The submissions related to impacts in relation to view loss, the breach of the height development standard, potential acoustic and privacy and noise impacts, and potential visual privacy impacts. So this is the site identified in red, and the submissions came from residential development to the east of the site. This is the existing building on the site, and that upper level of the building is occupied by a single penthouse. This is the subject rooftop to be converted to a roof terrace with a green roof landscaping. That's looking towards properties to the east. It's just an alternate view from the rooftop. This is a proposed roof plan. So centrally located within the roof, you have a roof terrace and garden and then landscaping around that. That is accessed by a spiral staircase from the deck below, which is accessed from the level 5 penthouse. This is a proposed eastern elevation, so the red line identifies the 15 metre height limit that applies to the site. So the proposed roof deck and works associated with that are above the height limit. This is the southern elevation and the proposed northern elevation. This is a photo montage of the proposed development. So you have the existing building from the street you'll see the proposed glazed balustrade around the edge of that roof deck. It's just an illustration of the materials proposed. In terms of the key controls, the site is subject to a 15-metre height limit. The existing building has a maximum height of 15.74 metres, and the proposed development would have a maximum height of 17.04 metres. So that's a 13.6% variation to the control. There is a control at the DCP in terms of height and storeys, so 4 storeys. The existing building is 5 storeys, so there's no change to the number of storeys within the building, although there is an increase in height. In terms of floor space ratio, the existing building is over the permissible floor space ratio for the site, but there's no new floor space proposed as part of this application. So the issues are essentially non-compliance with the height and the submitted clause 4.6 variation and the potential impact, particularly in terms of fuel loss from that non-compliance. In terms of the height, the maximum height will be 17.04 metres, 13.6% variation. The applicant has submitted a clause 4.6 variation to the standard, and justifies the standard on the basis of being no adverse view showing impacts to the Harbour Bridge and city skyline, that green roofs are encouraged by council, and there will be no unreasonable level of bulk or scale resulting from the development. The clause 4.6 variation is not supported in this instance. The proposal will adversely impact on significant views from neighbouring property. The standard is not considered to be unreasonable or unnecessary in this instance, and though the information submitted clearly demonstrates impacts on some residents, insufficient information has been submitted to assess the full impact to all surrounding properties. So in terms of the potential impacts of the development, this slide shows the proposed view from the 5th floor apartment at 67 Cavill Wharf Roadway. So you can see the additions on the top of the existing building, potential impacts on the views from that apartment. This is an existing view from the communal area of 67 Cavill Wharf Roadway, and that would be the proposed development. You can see the difference between existing and proposed. And this is a proposed view from another part of that communal space, 67 Cavill Wharf Roadway. So the application is recommended for refusal. Thank you.
Okay, so I'll ask Mark Hardwick to come forward and address the panel.
There we go. Hello. Hello to the panel, and thank you for letting me speak. I live with my wife at 26 Macalone Street, so there isn't actually pictures in your information here exactly, but I just want to thank Nicholas Beck, that I believe has prepared the information you have here. I presume I've never been involved in anything like this before, but I presume you've read through. So I guess in some ways I'm just here to sort of put a face and voice to back up all the recommendations in here. I'm not obviously going to go, you would understand the technicalities here. I just want to point out, it's just been said, it's very clear that the building 65 Cavill Wharf Road is already 5 storeys, it's already, according to your own regulations here, as high as it can be. I believe it was only built, 10 years ago, and it's high enough. I mean, if this was to go ahead, we would literally walk out onto our balcony, and instead, it's similar to some of these on here, but it's a little bit, anyway, we would just walk out, and there's the Harbour Bridge at the moment, and we would just be seeing a garden. I'm all for having, it sounds brilliant, doesn't it? If we all just imagine having a garden looking out across the harbour, it sounds brilliant, but myself, and I speak for Stuart Rigg, the owner of 20, he couldn't be here today, of the other unit 20, I believe it's number 20, there's 6 units at the top with all views at the moment of the Harbour Bridge, a little bit of the water, it's not a super high view. I mean, all the buildings are at a certain height, right? So my wife and I bought the unit just a year ago, and assuming that we understand things can change and different things move in the area, it's a dynamic area, but just to get the letter of the month, the one that just built blocking your view, you can imagine that was still a little bit like, it's not a new building, it's already there. The person bought, whoever owns the unit already has a unit on the fifth floor. Why do they get to have just block everyone else's view? It seems very unfair, I guess, obviously, is what I'm getting at. I won't keep you any longer. Thank you for listening. But I just guess I'm really just here to back up what's on here and point out that there is, if you just visualise what it's like for us having our unit there with the views and then to have them all blocked, it would also obviously devalue, I believe, our unit. I understand, we've got to consider different people and that it's nice to have a garden, but in this particular instance, it does affect us and it does affect Stuart next door and all of the neighbours in our block, and we're not even, there's not even pictures of our own here, so what I'm getting at is if it didn't affect anyone, I guess you'd have a case to go outside your own rules and maybe allow someone, but I'm hoping, assuming that it's just given us already its maximum height, that it's going to be refused. End of rant.
Thank you for that. Any questions for the speaker, Mark? Thanks, Mark. Were there any other speakers from the residents who wanted to speak on this? No? Okay, I've got Michael Harrison and Bruce Beale on behalf of the applicant. You can come up together or separately if you'll come up together.
I've got a hand, so I want a hand. Those that don't want part of this good consensus, but also the walk is up here glazing, we're looking here glazing, and and I've also got some speaking notes here, which might be useful to have. Let me hand over to them. I'm Michael Harrison, Director of Architecture. I'm an urban planner and urban designer, and have been involved in developing this project since the inception. And Bruce Eales is with me, he's the architect. Bruce is really available, I think, for questions after this. I'm going to give the short presentation. As we're faced with a potential refusal, it's important, I think, for the panel to understand issues as much as possible. It's a relatively small project. The handout is a series of attachments, and I'll speak to those attachments. Attachment one is the illustration of the green roof. The green roof, including the surrounding planters, occupies about 35% of the roof area. Now, council has a green roof policy. So when I became involved in the project, I thought, well, this is an admirable idea, a green roof on the top of a low building in Wilmloo. People overlooking it will have their views actually improved. And the way the roof is designed, if you look at the next page, attachment 2, there's a heavy line around the roof garden area. So the level 18.56 is a heavy line. That's what's called the upper roof or the plinth, and that's where the roof garden and the deck sit. Surrounding that plinth at a lower level, about 500 millimetres lower, is a series of planters at the edge and a low balustrade, which is that blue line going around the edge, and it's located there for these areas. There's also a spiral stair, as you see in the bottom right-hand corner of that diagram on attachment 2, giving access from the terrace below. When you look at the wording of the balustrade, you'll see the word new low balustrade. So that applies to the west side, the north side on South Cupples Road, and the east side, most east side. There's a higher balustrade, which is from the new stair and to partly on the east side, but mainly on the south side of the project, and that's to do with CTA issues. So that's, I guess, the background of the proposal. In what's actually happening is there's a the roof, the deck, and the planting around the deck is 250 millimetres above the existing concrete, what I call plinth. That's interesting, that 250 millimetre increase in solidity. In fact, it's only 60 millimetres higher than the development consent for the start. So we're talking about a 60 millimetre increase on a development consent for the start. Well, what's above that, what's causing the 13% increase in building height is that upper, that higher level balustrade, which is called clear glass. Most of the balustrade is at a lower level. So while it's been said that the balustrade is 2.04 metres higher than the building height limit, most of it's at 1.54. And the 2 metre height is mainly in the south boundary and the return. The next page is the detachment 3. That's the section or elevation showing the balustrade on the roof. And in elevation, of course, you see on that top one, which is north elevation, you see a lower balustrade, which is near the face of the building, and you see the higher balustrade right at the back, the rear.
So, Michael, and that is your seat. Your microphone's actually not on. It wasn't.
Is that okay now?
So this... Oh, you're turning it off. Yes. If I turn mine on, you'll turn it off.
So it's a bit complicated that the elevation to read, but if anyone has any detailed questions, we can go through that. The next one, attachment 4, it shows the three views that were taken, and the first view is from a fifth level apartment, which is on Admiralty Gardens, is that building to the east. The second view is from the swimming pool area, which is on the fourth level, so the level below the fifth floor apartment. And the third view is on the same level, the fourth level, but from the more of the open area north of the swimming pool on that roof deck of the neighbours. So going to those views, which were presented earlier, on attachment 5, you can see the view from the fifth floor apartment. We've lightened up the glazing, so it's a little bit more obviously transparent, and I think in reality it's even more transparent than shown here, but we've got to obviously illustrate it. So fundamentally the view of the city doesn't really change. Yes, it's a transparent balustrade in front of the some of the buildings, but that's the, I guess, the main impact. The way the balustrade is designed, and Bruce can explain this in more detail if you wish, it has vertical uprights with glass spanning between the two, which I think is similar to balustrades elsewhere on the building. Later on, if that is an issue, it could be completely framed as glass, but I think the architect would prefer that design, which means that must be at least 90% of the of that balustrade is transparent to the view beyond. Attachment 6 is the view from the swimming pool area, and that shows that it's a lower level than the fifth floor apartment. So we're just seeing the tops of the building for the city skyline and the transparent balustrade in front. And then attachment 7 is the view from, oh, I beg your pardon, I'll go back to front. Anyway, it's a view from the common deck on the fourth floor of Battersea Garden, and of course the bridge is completely, so depending where you walk along that common deck, the bridge is either slightly obscured or it's fully in view. It's a rather long common area. On attachment 6 is the existing building, the view from Capel Wharf Road, and showing the balustrade above. It probably overstates the impact of the balustrade. It looks like sort of black verticals, but there would be, I think it's a standstill vertical, aluminium vertical, and that could be frameless if that was considered to be important. The last page, attachment 9, it's saying that if it's inviting a potential development condition to move the balustrade in a little bit further from the edge of the building, but that would mean the loss of the planter boxes along the edge of the plinth on the north and eastern sides because to meet accessibility requirements and so forth. I don't think that's necessary, but it's something that could be done if the panel thought so. So in the speaking notes that I've handed out, I think that I've covered all of the points. I firmly consider the impact on neighbours' views is rather marginal and low, and I'd be quite, if I was a neighbour, I'd be very concerned if I saw a letter in the mail that talked about a two point whatever metre increase in the height. It's not really, when it comes down to it, that's not really the situation. Yes, technically, to the top of the balustrade it is, but the transparent balustrades and the solid increase in height, that is 250 millimetres above the existing concrete plinth. I think that's it. I think it's a bit of a storm in a teacup. I'm a bit surprised that we're facing with being recommended for refusal. It's in line with the council policy on green roofs, and I was delighted to be involved in this project and delighted to be involved with an eminent architect to improve the appearance of this building when people are looking at.
Thank you, Michael. Does the panel have any questions for Michael or Bruce? Yeah.
Thanks, Michael. Thanks, Bruce. I just have a couple of questions, clarifications. For instance, on attachment 5, which is the view from the adjoining building, the balustrade shown on what is the original or the existing main roof building, that's extant now, isn't it? That glass balustrade that's in the forefront, the view of attachment 5. Yeah. And so you're proposing to use a similar, not exactly the same, glass balustrade. This kind here, where the glass is captured. The glass is captured on the sides, but there's three on the top and the bottom, which allows drainage to go underneath. And it's the sort of most minimal impact of these semi, clear ones you can buy. Particular view, you can see, I imagine planter boxes through back glazing. You don't see any plants, of course. I imagine that over time you will see plants going out of those planter boxes. So that's a fairly minimalist view of what that green roof might look like over after a few years.
Answer that. The planting is designed by Oculus, and it's to be designed to be a 200 millimetre maximum mature height, and it's designed, the species are deliberately chosen to be attracting the birds and bees and so forth. So you could add a 200 millimetre ribbon of digit of green above those planters that you see there.
More questions before I finish. What's the reason for the change in the height of the new balustrade? You've got the low balustrade and the high balustrade adjacent to where the step is.
excuse me. The higher one is to reflects the fans and mechanical equipment that poke through the roof on the southern edge. So there was a DA approved for raising the height limit to try and get this all this plant underneath that. But it is sticking up, you know, 300-400 millimetres, and so that stops the having the higher glass stops the ability to jump over, because that's the step, the top of those sort of mushrooms that they have on roofs, which are fixed, yeah.
Amelia?
I'm curious whether you looked at any other configurations that used just the southern part of the site, so that you didn't, you know, so that you had the garden around here, so this northern part where the view is most impacted on the other properties, whether you looked at just keeping the roof garden down there?
I think it was simply the configuration of the roof is there now. There's this concrete fence and it's covering that whole fence with 300 millimetres of, or most of it with 200 millimetres of vegetation. And that was seen to work with the architecture of the building. I think the visual impact views demonstrate that this would be a pretty minimal impact. It could be cut back, but I don't really see the real benefit to do that in reality. There was a comment made in the report that the visual impact wasn't sufficient because not enough views were chosen, and certainly if that's an issue that the panel feels, we could do some additional views from any nominated resident that lets us have access. But the three views we chose were from the previous, from the DA for the building, I understand, and I've been on the roof and I've seen to the neighbours, and these three views are really the most critical. Any other view would have, I think, less impact.
Ellen?
Notwithstanding it's a transparent balustrade, the reality is that glass is not transparent. It actually collects dirt. It actually reflects light. And inevitably the plants will grow and furniture will be put there for the obvious reason to use that space, and it will accumulate a barrier, and even in the occupation will accumulate obstructions there. It's a very hot, unprotected environment as well, so I'd imagine if I was using that space, I'd want the benefit of an umbrella or shade. So I think it's not so much the proposal as it stands, it's the accumulated additions over time and through occupation which would be of most concern, and I'm sort of at a challenge to see how you can ameliorate that in reality.
I think that I do own the apartment, penthouse apartment, and will control the roof garden. He's very aware of that situation. It's been made very clear to him. The approval is only for the height of the balustrade. You can't have no, you wouldn't be able to have umbrellas and so forth. Obviously that's a, I guess, a policing issue. But if neighbours were concerned about something appearing on the roof that shouldn't be there, I'm sure council would be alerted. So it's a normal issue, and I think it's an issue for green roofs and roof terraces anywhere. And I think it shouldn't deny implementing council's own green roof policy.
No further questions from the panel, so thanks, Michael and Bruce. What I might do is ask Mr. Yarn to respond to some of those points of discussion, and I'd be particularly interested in a view about, I mean, all the things that we've covered, but particularly about the green build, green roof policy, and whether that increased transparency, I guess, of the balustrading would change staff view about the visual impact or not. But among the other things that the panel members have raised.
Yes, of course, we are very supportive of green roofs, and that's not in question. As we developed the green roof policy and promoted it to council and also to applicants, but the issue here is that the proposal requires a 4.6 variation to the development standards, and it's unable, in our view, to justify that a 4.6 should be supported above the development controls, given that there are material impacts on others within the view cones of icons, for example, of City Harbour Bridge and other views of the harbour. So there's no trade-off on the green roof policy. So we don't look more favourably on a green roof and forgive a development standard being breached. It's a question of if a green roof can be achieved within a development standard, that is terrific and should be looked at in its merits with all of its maintenance plans and everything else to make sure that it survives. On the issue of the usability of the terrace on the roof, that's a very genuine issue that was raised by one of the panellists. We're not in a position to provide compliance action regarding umbrellas. It's not part of an approval. It's not. It's something which is temporal. And wouldn't be something that is, could be effectively leased, so to speak. But there'd be all sorts of summer concerns about heat and exposure that would be used to justify shade or the usability on that terrace if it came to a debate about the utility of shade in summer. So on those two points that you've raised, Chair, I think that it's not a trade-off on the green roof. We do encourage them and we support them, but it's not a trade-off. There's not enough evidence to support a 4.6 modification variation request, in our view. Clear glass in open territory notoriously does, as was suggested, collect dirt and rain and whatever all the time. You'd have to polish the glass effectively each week to maintain transparency in exposed condition, which is different to a condition under a terrace. So, and then the third point was, would I regard the utility of using the space to bring in other shade factors, I think, yes. And we couldn't release that.
Very much. Panel members, any further points they would like to make, any views they would like to express? So Michael and Bruce, thank you very much. If you could return to the gallery, and thanks for your time. I think if this proposal didn't breach development standards, that it would probably be looked at differently. But I think given the assessment of view affectation, I'm prepared to move the recommendation with one slight change, actually, because I think the wording of the first reason for refusal is not quite right. And it needs the word. Yeah, sure.
Words are variation to the. So in reason A, it should include on the last sentence justifying the proposal, proposed variation to the height development standard.
But that amendment, I'll move the recommendation. All in favour, say aye.
Aye.
Declare that carried. And I do thank the speakers for their time and efforts for that one. We move to item 5, which is development application for 19 to 37 Greek Street, Glebe. And I'm going to ask Bill to run through this app.
But this is an application for the refurbishment and facade alterations to an existing building, the construction of one additional commercial level on top of the building with rooftop plants and enclosure and a lookout run above that. It's also introducing the provision of car parking on the lower ground level. The application site is within a B2 local centre zone development permissible with consent. The application is recommended for approval with condition. It was notified in March of this year. 260 owners and occupiers were notified and 5 submissions were received. The original application sought consent for a 2-storey addition. That was the application that was notified. It's since been amended and now it's a single-storey addition. So the submissions were in relation to the original scheme. The submissions received related to potential issues of overshadowing, loss of privacy, streetscape impacts, loss of views, additional traffic and disturbance during construction work. This is a site identified in red. It's on the north side of Greek Street opposite the car park and Broadway Shopping Centre, and the submissions came from the residential buildings immediately adjacent to either side of the development site. This is the existing building on site. This view is looking east along Greek Street. This is a view a little further away, looking east along Greek Street, and this is looking in the opposite direction. This is the Broadway Shopping Centre car park on the opposite south side of Greek Street. And this is a view of the site from Bay Street, so the existing building is just hidden behind the trees, and the larger building in the photograph is the car park on the south side of Greek Street. And this is an elevated view of the existing building showing the existing roof wall, and that will be replaced with that additional commercial floor on top of the building, which is set back from the building alignments both to Greek Street and from the north elevation. This is a view of the existing building, its relationship to the adjacent residential building. So this is the proposed lower ground floor plan where the car parking is to be provided. Ground floor plan, minor alterations, first floor plan, second, and then the third level, that's the new addition. So setback from Greek Street and the northern elevation. On the south side of Greek Street elevation, you have a usable, accessible deck, which is set in from the side boundaries with planter beds. And the space or the setback on the northern elevation is a roof, so that's not an accessible space. And then above that you have an area of plant enclosure that goes around. So this is the south elevation to Greek Street, the north rear elevation of the building section, side on section through the building showing the setback from the north and south elevation. Slide showing details of materials and finishes, and this is a detail of the sign that is proposed and the photo montage. Now the sign currently exists it has an approval, so the application is seeking consent effectively to retain that, refurbish it, and provide a new name on the sign. That name's not now, so for the purpose of the application, it's just illustrating a street address. The approved sign is from the Church of Scientology. The new sign would be used by whoever occupies the building in the future. In terms of compliance with the main controls, there's a non-compliance with the height limit for the site. The control is 15 metres. The existing building has a maximum height of 17.99 metres. The proposed development has a height of 17.92 metres to the top of the new, or the roof of the new addition, and 19.86 metres to the top of the plant above that. So there's a non-compliance of 4.86 metres, 32%. There's also a non-compliance with floor space ratio, but although the development is proposing new floor space in terms of the new addition, because of the provision of that ground level car parking, the development is floor space neutral. In terms of car parking, the controls will allow up to 24 car parking spaces and 10 spaces are proposed. The DCP has a height and storage control of 4 storeys. The proposed development would result in a 5-storey building, so there's non-compliance there. The application was considered by the Design Advisory Panel. They considered the original proposal, which proposed 2 additional floors. The Design Advisory Panel considered the variations to the height and floor space ratio controls to be too significant in relation to that proposal and therefore didn't support it. The application has since been amended. The height has been substantially reduced. It's now a 1-storey addition, so a 2-storey addition. And the floor space has also been reduced so that the development is now floor space neutral. But the issues essentially are the height and floor space non-compliances, issues raised by submitters related to view loss, potential amenity impacts. We have the issue in relation to the signage. It is an existing sign, it doesn't comply with the signage controls. The existing sign has a consent, has been there for quite some time. And also the treatment of a part of the Greek Street ground floor facade. So in terms of the height, the non-compliance is consistent with the built form and context of neighbouring buildings. So the neighbouring buildings either side are of a similar height. That which is proposed in the car park on the south side of Greek Street is considerably higher, and there are no significant amenity impacts resulting from the non-compliance. Now the application has been amended and it's now only for 1 floor as opposed to 2. So this slide shows the existing and proposed heights of the development. So the blue hatched area would represent an additional 1 floor, the orange area above that would represent the plant enclosure. You see the buildings either side of a similar overall height. The red dotted lines show the existing profile of the existing roof. This plan shows the proposed elevation of the building in relation to the height limit. The height limit is identified by the green dotted line. And you see the buildings either side of the proposed development are over the height limit, as is the existing building. In terms of the floor space ratio, there's no change to the gross floor area of the proposal due to the increase in off-street parking on the lower ground level. The new level does increase commercial floor space, but the built form and scale of the proposed development is considered to be appropriate to this context. In terms of view loss, there will be some impact on views from the rooftop terraces 39-41 Greek Street. The views affected into 2 buildings in the city skyline. The obstruction of views in this instance are considered to be minor and reasonable, and are certainly significantly less than what would have occurred from the original proposal. So these are some photographs from that rooftop terrace of the adjacent property at 39-41 Greek Street. In terms of potential amenity impacts, it's considered the amenity scheme doesn't have any significant adverse amenity impacts on adjacent or surrounding development. The level 3 terrace that is proposed is on the south side, the Greek Street side of the development. It's limited in size, it's set back from the boundaries of the property. And in terms of the ground ground floor glass block windows to the north elevation are simply infilling existing openings in the building with obscure facing. In terms of the signage, there's an existing vertical projecting wall sign on the site. That is to be retained and refurbished, provided with new content. The existing sign is subject to an approval. The sign that's been put on the site is slightly non-compliant with the terms of that approval, but it has been in existence for quite a number of years. And on that basis, the retention or refurbishment of the sign is supported. There is a condition recommended in relation to the illumination of the sign and the details of the content of the sign to be submitted and approved. So that's the existing sign on the site. In terms of the Queen Street ground levels, facade, existing louvers are to be replaced and a number of additional levels are proposed. Limited details have been provided in relation to that component of the facade. The condition recommends submission of high quality screening treatment to those areas that create visual interest. Details to be submitted and approved. And this illustration shows the area of that ground level facade. So it's essentially up to about half of the facade of the eastern section of the ground floor. And the plan show louvers, which behind which will be various services, access to the car park. So the application is recommended for approval, subject to conditions. Thank you.
So look, I have got Andrew Derrick on behalf of the applicant, who has indicated he's here to answer questions. Do you want to speak? Not necessarily. Okay. Panel. I'll ask the panel if they've got any observations or points they want to make. I think we're pretty comfortable with this, so I'll put the recommendation to approve, subject to conditions, and also the reasons for our decision are the reasons for the recommendation to council officers report. So I'll put that recommendation. All in favour say aye, or against. So that's carried unanimously. Thank you for attending. We move to now, I'm just going to ask if there's anybody here in the gallery for the remaining items on the agenda. Upstairs, no? Nope? Okay. So I'm not ignoring Bill this time, but I don't think we necessarily need to run through the presentation. So there are some points I think to be made on each of the applications. So there are an application for 175 St John's Road, Glebe. I think Amelia, you might have had a point to make on that one. We'll put it to you.
Sure. So on that one, the DCP for boarding houses requires a kitchen to include a stovetop cooker and a sink. And their development doesn't include that, but I think it should include that. So proposing that in the communal area that we require a stovetop cooker and a sink, and I think Graham has looked at some wording that for us.
That could be accommodated by amendment to condition 2. Page 32, and that would be by changing the heading of the condition from dimensions of front planter boxes to design changes, and then adding after that, the common room is to include a joinery unit with a sink and a stove top oven, and then it can go on the dimensions of the front planter boxes, and then both are to be amended on the plans and approved by council officers.
So, any other panel comment? Yep, okay. So with those changes, so what we need to do now is approve subject to the recommended conditions as just varied. And we also need to our reasons for approving our study officer's report. So we need to add an additional point as to why we've just done what we've done, which I suggest could be that the panel added the new condition to approve the amenity of the development for residents.
Perhaps we'd also say, yeah, to comply with the DCP, consistent with the DCP.
Okay, thank you. So, we vote on that? No. Okay. Yeah, I'll move that. All in favour, say aye. Okay, declare that carried. Thank you. So, item 7, development application 310 Cleveland Street, Barry Hills. I think, Storani, you had a point to make on this one?
I'm not sure. Rely on for where this goes, but the condition would be that the existing fan coil units affixed to the front of the building, the front of the residence on Cleveland Street on the upper level, be relocated. So as to enhance, to remove these intrusive elements and to enhance the contribution of this building to the heritage conservation area. So to accommodate that suggestion, we could modify condition 2 called design modifications, add a B on page 25. It reads, the externally mounted AC units and associated conduits are to be removed from the front elevation and relocated out of view behind the parapet. Make wood all surfaces. And then it goes on, the modifications are to be submitted to the Council Area Planning Manager. I'll read it again. The externally mounted AC units on the Cleveland Street, on Cleveland Street frontage, on the upper, here. The externally mounted AC units and associated conduits on the Cleveland Street frontage are to be removed. Oh, I had that from the front elevation. Are to be removed and relocated out of view behind the parapet. Make good all surfaces.
So we amend the conditions as Ms. Young's just outlined and as we now have down. And then, so we've got the recommendations to approve the subject to the conditions as amended. And then our reasons for approving our study officer's report, we need to add an additional one as to why we've just done what we've done. So the panel added a condition to remove the air conditioning units to remove inappropriate visual clutter from the front of this contributory heritage
building.
Can you find that now? That's fine. So what it says is the panel added a condition. Added condition to relocate the AC units to remove visual clutter from the front of the building and to enhance the contribution of this building to the heritage conservation area. That's fine. That's good. Thank you. So with those changes to the condition and the reasons as per the officer's report, plus this additional reason, all in favour say aye.
Aye.
Okay. Aye. Aye. Declare carried unanimously. Thank you. That was item 7. And move to item 8, Lake Street, Oldmo, Rollador, Council Rollador. I'll move that recommendation. All those in favour say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Declare that one carried. And then we have item 9, which is for William Street, 19A2F, William Street, Alexandria. This recommendation is for approval. Again, I'm happy to move that recommendation. All in favour say aye.
Aye.
I'll declare that carried. And the final item, item 10, development application 19... Sorry, with both of those, we also include the officer's suggested reason as our reason. And then item 10, the last item, 19C William Street, Alexandria, which is recommended for refusal. And I'll move that recommendation. All in favour say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Declare that one carried unanimously. That completes the night's activities. So thank everyone for attending. Thank you to the panel. Thank you to staff and the public. Declare the meeting closed. Thank you very much. Thank you.